Today is Monday, January 11th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. House Democrats begin moves to impeach President Trump.
In calling for this seditious act, the president has committed an unspeakable assault on our nation and our people.
Also ahead, dozens of Zimbabwe nurses contract COVID-19.
The quota of the staff, they have COVID as we speak right now, which is quite a huge number.
Plus, U.S. President Donald Trump remains defiant as calls grow for his removal from office. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the House will proceed with legislation to impeach President Donald Trump as she pushes the Vice President to invoke constitutional authority to force him out. The House action could start as soon as Monday as pressure increases on Trump to step aside. The president is holed up at the White House, increasingly isolated after a mob rioted in the Capitol in support of his false claim of election fraud.
In calling for this seditious act, the president has committed an unspeakable assault on our nation and our people. I join the Senate Democratic leader in calling on the Vice President to remove this president by immediately invoking the 25th Amendment. If the Vice President and Cabinet do not act, the Congress may be prepared to move forward with impeachment.
Our democracy is what is at stake. The President leaves us no choice but to act because he is trying to corrupt once again the election for his own benefit. The president has engaged in abuse of power, undermining our national security and jeopardizing the integrity of our elections.
President Trump remains defiant amid calls to resign and plans to spend his last days in office, quote, playing offense, unquote. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Trump has not taken any responsibility for his role in inciting Wednesday's violence amid a rebellion from members of his own party and ongoing efforts to remove him from office. He's had no public schedule, but on Tuesday he'll travel to Alamo, Texas, to highlight his administration's efforts to curb illegal immigration and border wall construction. An ABC News Ipsos poll released Sunday found that 67% of respondents said Trump deserves a good amount or great deal of blame for the insurrection, and 56% believe he should be removed from office. I'm Julie Walker.
As law enforcement continues to arrest and charge those responsible for breaching the U.S. Capitol, terms like rioting, sedition, and insurrection have been used by some critics to describe their actions. To better understand the legal definitions of these terms, International Edition's Steve Miller spoke with Joe Paul, a constitutional law professor at the University of California, Hastings.
Sedition is basically the crime of inciting someone to commit insurrection. And what we mean by an insurrection is a violent uprising against the established government. Sedition's conspiracy would be conspiring to prevent the execution of any law of the United States or to seize U.S. government property by force, which in fact happened. The crime of insurrection, which under the federal law provides that anyone who incites or engages in a rebellion or insurrection against the laws of the United States or the authority of the United States or gives comfort or aid to people who engage in insurrection are subject to criminal penalty. And in that case, the criminal penalty includes being disqualified from ever holding office again.
And what about the term riot? Because some have called what happened on Wednesday a protest, while law enforcement has labeled it a riot. So what is the legal threshold?
Well, any kind of a violent public disturbance can constitute a riot. And a riot could be against an individual. It could be against property, either public or private property. It isn't necessarily aimed at a political purpose or against the authority of the United States government. So those individuals who who burned stores or attacked police cars or policemen during the otherwise peaceful demonstrations may be guilty of engaging in a riot. And that would be a violation both of federal law and also a violation of the laws of the District of Columbia. So at a minimum, the people who engaged in the violent attack on the Capitol are guilty of violating the laws of the District of Columbia, and they can be imprisoned for up to 10 years for that. And a person who incites someone to riot can also be imprisoned for up to 10 years.
Thank you for that. I want to switch gears for just a second here. Democrats have called on President Trump to either resign or for Vice President Mike Pence and a majority of the cabinet to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump from office. Barring those two things, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi has indicated that she will bring forward articles of impeachment on Monday and then hand those over to the Senate, where a trial to remove the president would then take place. However, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has stated that because the Senate is in a pro forma session, meaning not meeting until January 19th, that any articles brought forward would not be discussed until the earliest January 19th, a day before President-elect Biden's inauguration. As a constitutional legal expert, is that a correct interpretation of the outline in the Constitution?
Well, it's a correct reading of the rules, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the president couldn't be impeached even after he leaves office. I mean, he could be convicted, rather, for the crime after he leaves office. So it is possible that the president could be impeached before he leaves office and then convicted after he leaves office. And the significance of the conviction after he leaves office would not simply be historical, setting a precedent and making it clear that what the president did was unconstitutional and a violation of his duties as president. But it would also bar him from ever seeking or holding federal office in the future.
And another aspect of this is, aside from voting a president out of office, invoking the 25th Amendment, and impeaching and then removing a president through that mechanism, are there any other constitutional ways for a president to be removed from office?
Well, potentially a constitutional way to have him removed from office, yes. The 14th Amendment, Section 3, prohibits a person from serving in federal or state office if they have engaged in insurrection against the United States. A court could potentially issue an order saying that the president is hereby removed and is in violation. It's in violation of the 14th Amendment's literal language for him to remain in office. The problem with that is basically a problem of civil procedure. It's difficult to get into court unless you have standing, and I don't know who might have standing to do that.
That's International Edition's Steve Miller speaking with Joel Paul, a constitutional law professor at the University of California, Hastings. And we have AP correspondent Julie Walker again reporting on who took part in the storming of the U.S. Capitol.
The insurrectionist mob that showed up at President Trump's instruction and stormed the Capitol was overwhelmingly made up of his longtime supporters, and the evidence disputes claims by those who say otherwise. Those supporters who were there include Republican Party officials, GOP political donors, far-right militants, white supremacists, members of the military, and adherents of the QAnon myth. Records show that some were heavily armed and included convicted criminals. The Associated Press reviewed social media posts, voter registrations, court files, and other public records for more than 120 people either facing criminal charges related to the attack or who, going maskless amid the pandemic, were later identified through photographs and videos taken that day. The evidence disputes claims by right-wing pundits and Republican officials who say the violence was perpetrated by left-wing Antifa. I'm Julie Walker.
The U.S. Capitol Police has announced the death of another officer as lawmakers continue to demand a full accounting of exactly what went wrong the day a mob of Trump supporters stormed the building. Here again is AP's Julie Walker.
51-year-old Officer Howard Liebengood's death Saturday was an apparent suicide, according to two people familiar with the matter. He'd been with the department 15 years and was the son of a former Senate sergeant-at-arms. A Capitol Police officer hit in the head with a fire extinguisher died, along with a rioter who was shot by police and three others who suffered medical emergencies. Lawmakers want to know why police were underprepared. Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
The chief of the D.C. Capitol Police lied to House Administration Chairwoman Zoe Lofgren about the preparations of what happened.
Republican Representative Allen Kinzinger.
I think we were very close to actually having members of Congress killed.
They made their remarks on ABC's This Week.
Former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger is blasting President Donald Trump for last week's insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. AP Entertainment correspondent Oscar Wells Gabriel reports on what the actor has to say.
President Trump is a failed leader. He will go down in history as the worst president ever.
Arnold Schwarzenegger mincing no words when it comes to the man he replaced as host of the reality TV show The Apprentice. Schwarzenegger compared the mob that stormed the Capitol last week to the Nazis who overran Germany and his native Austria in 1938. The Terminator actor ripped Trump personally, noting that his term as president will soon be terminated.
The good thing is that he soon will be as irrelevant as an old tweet.
Schwarzenegger's tirade against Trump ran close to 8 minutes and was released on social media. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
This is the Voice of America. Egypt is hosting the foreign ministers of Germany, France, and Jordan to discuss ways to revive peace talks between Israel and the Palestinians. The hosts say the meeting's aim is to urge the Palestinian and Israelis to negotiate a, quote, just and comprehensive political settlement, unquote, on the basis of achieving a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital on territory Israel occupied in the 1967 Middle East War. The meeting comes just a week before President-elect Joe Biden takes office. Lebanon's caretaker prime minister says the country has entered a very critical zone in the battle against coronavirus as his government mulls tightening the nation's lockdown announced last week. That lockdown and a nighttime curfew were imposed following a new post-holiday surge in infections, but many were critical of the government's measures, calling them lax for exempting many sectors such as factories, plant nurseries, and exchange bureaus. Yemen's Iran-backed rebels are dismissing the Trump administration's move to designate their group as a terrorist organization. The leading aid agency warned on Monday that U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's announcement of the designation will deal another devastating blow to the impoverished and war-torn nation. A powerful leader of the rebel Houthis tweeted that they, quote, are not fearful, unquote. But the Norwegian Refugee Council, one of the main humanitarian agencies active in Yemen, said the designation and Pompeo's planned sanctions on the Houthis will hamstring the ability of aid agencies to respond to the humanitarian needs of millions of Yemenis.
In a minute.
NASA announced that it is extending two of its current missions that are providing valuable new insight into our solar system. One of the missions to get the okay to continue its work is Juno, which has been sending back data that provides scientists with a better understanding of the origin and evolution of Jupiter. Juno began its mission after arriving at the giant planet in July 2016 and was scheduled to end its work this July. Its mission has now been extended to September 2025, or until the space probe stops working before then. The other mission is InSight, which has been studying the inner workings of Mars since it landed in November 2018. Its job on the Red Planet was to have ended a couple of months ago, but the space agency has tacked on an extra 2 more years to finish its work. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Authorities confirmed that they have located the site of the crash and black boxes of a Boeing 737-500 aircraft. The discovery comes a day after the plane crashed into the Java Sea, carrying 62 people on board. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Search and rescue teams sifted through the debris. Shortly after, military chief Hadi Chahianto confirmed there had been progress in their search. We have determined the position of the plane's black boxes from two signals emitted by the devices. The official diving team signaled the waters were clear, enabling rescuers to find parts of the plane, body parts and pieces of children's clothing. Relative to five of the victims, Rizky Kurniawan says he was shocked to discover his family were on the flight. I was asking for the onboard manifest, and when I saw the five names of that family, I could not do anything. I can only cry. Indonesia's president, Joko Widodo, sent his condolences to all those involved. I, on behalf of the government and all Indonesian people, express my deep condolences for the occurrence of this tragedy. I'm Karen Chamas.
A spike in COVID-19 infections among Zimbabwe nurses and a lack of protective equipment threatens the government's effort to contain the pandemic. As healthcare workers call for a strike to push for better working conditions, I reached Prince Taraswa, a senior midwife at the Sally Mugabe General Hospital, on the challenges of caring for a growing number of patients.
Water is the number one problem. There is an inadequate supply of water. Most of the times we don't have running water. The number one problem is the issue of resources. We don't have surgical sundries, like bandages, surgical blades, and also some other vital machines. Like, for example, in my ward that I work, we've got about, it's subdivided into six units, but we share one suction machine. So if another unit requires a suction machine, you've got to move from one place and you get it from another unit, and it actually affects a lot of things. There are some, not fluid giving such as such, but there are fluid giving machines, the ones that administer, that you put the fluid giving set for to administer IV fluids. We have very few, and some few other machinery that we do not have that further complicates the issue.
How many of your members have either been infected or died because of COVID-19?
We do not have enough PPE, so it has resulted in some of our members getting infected by the COVID virus. We do not have the correct number right now of how many staff members have fallen ill recently, but giving an example of one ward, a quarter of the staff, they have COVID as we speak right now, which is quite a huge number. And people are getting tested, they're getting positive, and this is a very sad scenario. We've been trying to compile members, but it's difficult because when some of your members are in isolation, information is very difficult to flow, to come in. So at the end of the day, you rely information with information from the infection and control sisters. But the number is getting high. As a union, we've been trying to compile the list so that we can come up with the number of nurses that have tested positive. But I can safely say for the past week, we've had about 15, more than 15 nurses testing positive for the virus. And it has been a sad scenario. The number is growing up every day. You get about 7, 8, or even at most 10 people getting positive. These are mainly nurses, not doctors.
Some are worried that a strike at this moment will worsen the health crisis.
It was not a strike as such, but it was just a general meeting, and then it was called off. But people did not work for quite a good number of hours, and then no more was retained as they were assured that something was being done. So as we speak right now, people have given them some days to see if something is going to improve, then they'll map their way forward. As we have always said, as a union, we do not actually think the strike action at this middle of the pandemic is the best way to go. But at times, the nurses are left with no option but to follow that route. But we have said, let's wait, let's give dialogue a chance as we see if these concerns are being addressed, because we do not have to have a situation whereby strikes become the order of the day, and a situation whereby each and every time there is an issue of nurses striking because of poor PPE, poor remuneration and things like that. We want a situation whereby these grievances are addressed as they are, without politicizing them, whereby these grievances are addressed in good faith with each and every party committed to make sure that things are solved. Then we'll be in a position to move forward to tackle this pandemic without having to lose a lot of lives.
That's Prince Taraswa speaking with me from Harare. UN officials warn prevailing political conditions in Uganda are stacked against the likelihood of free and fair parliamentary and presidential elections later this week. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The lead-up to Uganda's national elections has been marred by increasing violence, numerous human rights violations, and restrictions imposed on opposition candidates and supporters. Spokeswoman for the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Ravina Shamdasani, says the deteriorating human rights situation in the country is likely to discourage people from voting. This, she says, raises the prospect of continued unrest after the election.
Numerous human rights violations have been reported, including of the rights to freedom of expression, peaceful assembly and participation, as well as arbitrary deprivation of life, arbitrary arrest and detention, and torture. Indeed, harassment, ill-treatment, arbitrary arrests and detention of opposition candidates and supporters have been worrying developments during the electoral campaign.
In mid-November, the arrest and detention of two opposition presidential candidates, Bobi Wine and Patrick Oboy Amuriat, and members of the political opposition, triggered riots and protests across the country. At least 54 people were killed. Shamdasani says several presidential directives on COVID-19 have been issued since March, purportedly on health grounds. She notes Uganda's Electoral Commission issued a new decree in June. It prohibits mass rallies during the election campaigns, suggesting digital electoral campaigns instead.
Human rights law, under certain circumstances, may allow for restrictions to mass gatherings and physical campaigning for public health reasons. However, we've increasingly observed that the COVID-19 restrictions have been enforced more strictly to curtail opposition electoral campaign activities in a discriminatory fashion.
The UN Human Rights Office is calling on the Ugandan authorities to protect people's rights to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly. It is urging them to take measures to prevent electoral violence and to guarantee the rights of people to participate freely and peacefully in the election process. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokhvilia Barrow, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I'm Chinedofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all.
and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09.05 and 20.05 UTC right after the international news.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500.